It's the Tiltcast, episode 621, Jason Plays a Game.
And this week, guys, we talk about Elder Scrolls Oblivion, Tainted Grail, Fall of Avalon, Doom, The Dark Ages, and Clair Obscura, Expedition 33. Stay tuned.
Which game do you think you played? It's one of those. We are back.
Woohoo!
For not yet another episode of the Tiltcast. This is an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason, and we're Sands of Rusty.
Yep, and of the two of us, you'll get a few minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. It's May 25th at 2:13 p.m., and me and Jason are stretched for time. I don't see this being a real long episode, guys.
Apologies. We'll get back to normal.
Yeah, but a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's been a lot. That said, it's not all bad. Just busy life.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Oh, work's still been busy as crap. Family's still been busy as crap, and I did actually manage to get about 6 hours into the Oblivion remake.
Hey, you actually got you some you time.
I did. Oh, going back to playing through that game is like going back to an old comfort food after being on a diet for years, and only that old comfort food has a new packaging.
Yeah, so we want to just lean into that. What did you roll?
I went pure caster.
Pure caster? Did you do the astrology sign or just the mage sign?
The astrology sign.
So now I think that's the glass cannon one?
Yep.
That's rough, because there's a lot of casters. I think it's like 50% extra damage from magic or something.
Yeah. Yep. But, sure, it'll probably make it rough for the, first 15 levels or so. But I figure at some point, the spells are going to be powerful enough that's not really going to matter as long as I don't get too mob happy.
You started crushing Oblivion Gates, or are you just roaming the countryside?
I just really roamed the countryside so far. Taking in all the newness. They really have made areas in Oblivion like really pretty.
Yeah, it looks like a completely new game.
Yeah.
Spell effects are still a little bit off, but
yeah, but I think overall, I think they've set a good bar of expectation for remakes with this, though. I mean, if you can do this just by laying Unreal 5 over the original engine, and obviously you have to rewrite some of the mechanics, right? Because Unreal 5 is not going to translate it 100%. But, like, I think this is the new bar.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's one of the best looking games out there right now, and it's a remake. It's funny, too, because, like, Last of Us, the first one, is on its like third or fourth remake already, and that game only came out 12 years ago. And this game came out 19 years ago. So it's its first remake ever. So it feels like Naughty Dog in the last like 5 years has just been cash cow in the damn Last of Us franchise. It's like we're just not getting anything out of that studio. Other than remakes of a remakes of a remake of a remake, like there's that new edition that has the first and second in there remake for PS5, and you're just like, all right, so we started with PS3, then we remade for PS4, then we remade for PS5, and then we remade it again. We're an extended, as you know, some not extended edition, but like a dual edition. Just like, come on, guys. Like, this is kind of ridiculous. It's a good looking game. Don't get me wrong. I have to look at a side by side to see the difference because it was already pretty striking when it came out. But the Oblivion remake, I know it's, or remasters, they're calling it, but it's a remake. They retuned some of the mechanics. Some of the things they should have fixed is the level scaling. So I've got a level 50 trying to do a Crusader. And yeah, stuff's pretty tanky right now. But so am I. Like, I don't take damage for anything. It just takes forever to get through anything. My guy just absorbs hits and blocks and parries and dodges and heals himself and got 500,000 potions. So I'm in a spot where it's like, yeah, that damage sponginess is kind of old. And like, I'm at a point where I've put, I don't know, I couldn't tell you without going to my computer to look, but I'd say I'm like 60 hours in. And I still haven't finished all the guilds and everything else. And I've got a little bit of fatigue. Like, I was like, should I just finish the storyline? Or, like, I haven't even done any spellcrafting. And I think for you, like, go ahead and finish out the Mage Guild stuff, right? And go get the spellcrafting so you can create those craziest spells. So that's one thing from Oblivion that they don't know that they did in the other games. But, yeah, go. Yeah,
they really didn't, because after that, I mean, you basically just found spell books, right?
Yeah, I haven't even tackled the DLCs yet, but like I feel, you know, I know what happens in this game, right? Like I know the quality of game, so I feel like I can rate it. It's an easy 4 or 5.
Oh yeah,
it's Oblivion. Oblivion is a pretty good game, and they fixed a lot of things. I think if they fixed the level scaling, I think it would be a better game. I think it'd be like a 4.8. That level scaling is the only really annoying thing. I mean, and, you know, if they went through and, like, retooled some of the combat and stuff, like, that would make it even better. But, like, hot damn, that game's, like, 19 years old, right? Like, they just fixed a few things, fixed some of the leveling so it wasn't as stupid. And, you know, restylized the game, added ray tracing and all sorts of stuff and made it beautiful. And that's what we wanted, right? Like, it's a video game-ass video game. It's a good one. So, you know, people are feasting right now. There's a lot of good stuff out right now. Like, I'm getting video game fatigue. But I'm glad you got some game time in. Like, last two episodes, Jason, you're just like, well, I had to do all this work. I watched some streams. What are you playing?
Yeah, basically.
Did you kind of – are you doing, like, a Destruction Mage or –
Oh, yeah, I'm going pure destruction. Just because I know once, at least in the early game, you can get, you know, like enough food, whatnot, to take care of all your healing, right? So I'm starting pure destruction. Once I start getting into later game, I'll nuance a bit more, but getting those destruction spells, especially when you're playing glass cannon, getting those leveled up. And
are you like dual wielding spells, or are you just like spell in one hand and like shield in the other, or what?
I'm spell in one hand and shield in the other for now. A couple more levels, I'll probably start really dual wielding spells.
There's a fair amount of, like, you figure this out in that game too. Like, there's a lot of, not a lot of quest markers, so to speak. I've got a quest to, so I've got to get the Crusader armor, which means I got to find all the shrines, which means looking at the map and then traveling till I get to points of interest. My horse has died like 72 times. but I've sold so much shit. Like, I'm at a point where I'm not worried about gold. I have 75,000 gold on my character. He's got a dragon horde. And that's just, you know, go clear out a dungeon, come back with a bunch of stuff, and like, you know, slow walk my way back because I don't want to throw away a single thing. Like, I think there is an upper limit to encumbrance, but I've got the spell that helps with encumbrance. I've got rings and boots that help with encumbrance. My heavy armor doesn't weigh hardly anything because that's what I specced into. And, yeah, I'll come back with a bunch of shit and then sell it all. Like, I've maxed out mercantile because I've sold so much stuff. But yeah, it's a very good game. I'm glad it came out. I'm glad it came out for the price of Game Pass. I'm glad that the modding scene's already diving into it. I'm glad you can get it. Like, I'll probably get it on a winter sale or something. Dive back in. Like, my, you know, I'm going to play this like 2 or 3 times at least. So just the, I may buy it on a Steam sale. I don't know yet. We'll see. If the Microsoft modding is easy, then I'll do that. But because we know Bethesda games aren't going to ever go away from the Game Pass.
Oh, yeah.
So it may be worth it to just mod that. But yeah, like, and it runs pretty good too. Like, you're not having any issues on the 3080, are you?
No, not at all. Not at all. It seems pretty well optimized all the way around.
Are you running ray tracing on it?
Yep.
Yeah, it looks good, doesn't it?
Which, even in 1080p, ray tracing looks amazing.
Right, but you played on like a 23-inch monitor or something, right?
27.
27, yeah. So that makes sense. At that point, it's hard to tell the difference between 1080 and 1440 and 4K.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could tell a little bit with 1440 if I had 1440. But realistically, like, 4K won't do me any good, so.
Oh, good. I'm glad you finally got into playing some game. It's been a long time coming. I hope you have a little bit more time going forward. I'm sure that'll keep you busy most of the summer, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I just want to be able to go back to, you know, at least having 2 nights a week where I can.
Yeah, I feel that. It's been similar for me. Like, this week I had to work, right? Which meant, well, I always have to work every week unless I take vacation. But this week I had to travel for work, which meant that all I was bringing was my Steam Deck, and it also meant that I was taking people out to dinner, etc., and busy every night. Nah, this week I don't have to do that. Next week I got to do the same thing again. But I got a lot of time. So, like, El Paso is pretty cool. I like that town. Food there is really good. I gained like 7 pounds in 3 days because, you know, the Mexican food in El Paso is just like top notch. And then my work partner there knows all the restaurants that came over from Juarez. So they're like legit as fuck. They had some flautas on Wednesday that were just like ridiculous. But I did play a couple of games on the Steam Deck, and then I did play some stuff at home when I got home. Fortunately, like last weekend, I hustle bust. I did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bands worth of photos in 3 days, which is a lot of work. I got done about 11 o'clock on Sunday and packed and left early a.m. on Monday. But while I was out, I played a couple of games while I was flying because that's really the only time I had much time to do anything. Got a big chunk through Magigoria, Whispers of the Witch Tree. Had about 14 hours played in that game. I feel like I've played a lot more than that, but I guess not. That game's, I talked about it before, it's kind of like Salt and Sanctuary. There's a couple of minor gripes. If you're not the warrior, you're the only real way you have to mitigate damage is through your dodge. The warrior has a shield, but you don't have anything other than dodge aside from that. So I need to think about respecing my character a little bit. I wish there was a parry, to be honest with you, like at least a parry, because I'm playing basically a pyromancer from Elden Ring. So I've got fire and then I got a big mace that's enchanted. And I do all sorts of fire effects. And when I do fire damage, like it spreads to other things if something's burning, which is pretty neat. And it's got a pretty good nuking potential. Kind of stuck on a vampire boss right now. I'm not really stuck. I've only put 3 attempts into it. It was kind of hard to get through while I was flying back. I played a lot of Mortal Sin, which I don't know. I think we talked about it a little bit last week, but I've played a lot more of it since. So I'm at about 3 hours. So about 6 hours of my time in flight was spent playing video games on my Steam Deck. And those are the two games that I played. Mortal Sin is a roguelite like that's melee based, but every run you unlock based on how far you get and how many dungeons you clear, you unlock more things, more classes, more weapons, etc. But it's a very fast paced game and it's very, very gory. So the idea is to dismember the creatures that are attacking you. So yes, you can do straight headshots, which do great damage, but it doesn't benefit you as much as cutting off the legs, then the arms, and then the head. So it's a game kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like Dead Space, right? You'd dismember creatures and then you'd finally kind of execute the kill shot. You've got to fully kill everything in this. And you can kick things into traps or knock them back into traps or use abilities to throw them into traps. Very physics-based, very weird art style. It's a very... It almost looks hand-drawn with really, really high contrast colors. The base color palette is kind of hard on the eyes. Let me just put it that way. And they added a filter that made it a lot easier on your eyes. But it runs on freaking everything. Mortal Sin's pretty cool. It's one of those games going to play in between stuff. Again, I'm going to be on another flight here in about 10 days. 8 days. So I'm probably playing a lot more Mortal Sin and Mandragora then. I did play a couple of other things. So there's a demo out. And we'll talk about this more. There's been some controversy over Borderlands 4. But when they were talking about the release date, the controversy is basically the price, right? I'll just talk about it. There was a story where essentially Randy Pitchford, you know, the Gearbox CEO, had said something on Twitter and some fan responded like, hey, essentially, don't charge $80 for this. And he's like, well, you know, there were games back when I was a teenager in the 90s that were more than that. And I did everything I could to get into it, right? And to get a game. So I would save money no matter how hard it was. I'd make sure it worked, which is pretty tone deaf right now in today's economy. And while the cost of games were pretty high back then, the cost of basic living was... compared to your income was pretty low. So, you know, again, not 10 years ago, I bought a house making $35,000 a year, right? And likewise to you. Even 10 years ago, things were different price-wise. So very tone deaf, right? From somebody who's a multimillionaire. Devolver Digital had released a tweet saying, well, for the price of one Borderlands, you and three friends can buy Mycopunk, which is a similar style game. I think it's a roguelite. It's kind of a little bit Deep Rock Galactic, a little bit Borderlands, a little bit something else. Anyways, you have several different classes of characters and you have objectives to do. And there's a demo out, so you can get it on Steam for free to check it out, which is a pretty good demo. It's a very difficult game. You teleport down to a planet and like there's different objectives. So there might be like planetary defense where you're trying to complete a series of objectives on a planet to get a railgun set up so you can shoot down an enemy spaceship, right? Very risk of rain too. That was the other game I was kind of looking for. So as you're killing stuff or unlocking loot boxes, you're unlocking components to upgrade the weapons that you have to have different effects. And there's a set amount of weapons in the demo. I don't know if they're going to expand that or not or add random rolls. But you essentially create the random roll for the gun by grabbing components and then piecing it together on the gun, which is kind of neat. So you got kind of a blank template that this is how this gun operates. added modifiers to it. It has this weird mechanic where when you run out of ammo with one gun, it stocks up ammo in the other gun. So you have to flip to your secondary weapon. So the primary and secondary weapon are pretty important. But there, for example, there's a modifier for infinite ammo. And after you're done using all the infinite ammo, it starts to chew at your health. Right? There's all sorts of little modifiers like that. But it spawns in a crazy amount of enemies. It kind of, again, kind of has a weird zaniness, kind of like Risk of Rain does. And everything's like mushroom themed. I don't know how to explain it. But the art style, again, is also a very weirdly done, hand-drawn, sort of cel-shaded, not real bright colors, kind of has an aesthetic almost like a Quake if it was more colorful, if that makes any sense, and cel-shaded. Very unique art style. It does work, though, and it runs ridiculously fast. Like I play everything on my TV. It maxes out at 120 FPS. When I pulled up the counter, it was running at 230 FPS on max settings. Again, I got a 4090, but like that, just saying, like if it'll do that, like I'm sure even a 1080 will freaking scream on this game. But MicroPunk,
that all depends on how it's structured, right? If it's pulling more on CUDA cores than Tensor cores. Yeah, probably. If it's relying on the Tensor cores for anything, then probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Put some more time into Expedition 33. That game just continues to get better. I've been playing that off and on. I've actually had nothing scheduled to do since Thursday. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I've done mostly, well, 2-3 games. I'm at a point where I'm caught up enough that I had time to play games, and I'm going to have time to play games tomorrow, which is great. Played Doom, got through the 7th chapter. That game's awesome. I know some people like the crazy platforming from the last one. Getting on the dragon is ridiculous. It's so cool. Getting the shield combos down and getting the new weapon upgrades and hunting for secrets is awesome. The checkpointing's pretty easy going. It's difficult enough without being overly difficult. I've gotten pretty good at the parry stuff. Doom Eternal is dope. It's a really good game. Highly recommend it. We'll see how it finishes out.
Dark Ages.
Dark Ages, yeah. Yeah, Doom is really good. Expedition 33, likewise, is very good. I'm at a point where I'm kind of retooling my characters, but I've gotten, if you run into anything, and it took me a while to figure this out, been trying my hardest to do this without spoilers or guides, but I'm going to look at a guide to rebuild a couple of characters. It has this mechanic, so there's 1, 2, 3 ways, 4 ways to avoid damage. So you can jump. You can dodge, you can parry, and then there's a heavy attack parry where you pull your trigger. I've gotten pretty good at the parry, and there are these enemies that are chromatic that are these mini bosses. And they're so fast, you don't get a turn until you stagger them. And you don't stagger them without countering, which means you got to get perfect counters over and over and over and over and over again. I just finished one while I was waiting on you to start podcast. And that was a challenge. It took me like 3 or 4 tries to really get into a groove to be able to parry that much. But I was like, I'm dodging everything, but like I never get a turn. What I found out is you got to counter him until you stun him, and then you get a full cycle. But the counters do lots of damage, so that's how you kill the boss, which is pretty crazy. The story's really good. It's very mature. I can't harp on this enough. Like, I do like the fact that everybody looks battle-worn after a battle. You go into a cutscene, and your guy has, like, dirt and blood all over his face, and, like, his clothes look disheveled. Like, it just looks cool. It has a very – it's a turn-based game, but it has a very similar dark sentiment like old Dragon Age from, like, Origins. Well, playing kind of like a Final Fantasy, but not really. There's so many different combos with your skills. It's – a lot to experiment with. Expedition 33, like, very much has the potential of winning Game of the Year. Like, it's such a good game. And there's so much content. I think I've put 25 hours into that game now. But it's really good. Like, it's worth your time. But us being a video game podcast, I can never just sit and finish a single thing. I got to tackle, like, five things at a time, right? We don't have a staff like PC Gamer. And we're down a guy, so I've been playing all the damn things as I have time. There's something that came out recently that you may not even know came out. So a couple years ago, I really liked the Tainted Grail games. It was a card game. It's made by a publisher that, let's see, what's the name of the publisher?
Oh, fuck, I don't know.
Well, the publisher is a card game maker. So I could just go to the store page.
Awakened Realms.
Yeah. So they've made a lot of card games. And the last Tainted Grail game was their first foray into video games. And it's a good game. Like, I had a lot of fun with it. It's a card game, card battler, right? Kind of roam around in a 3D space and then play cards to win, right? So anyways, long story short, it's a pretty good four and a quarter game for Tiltcast, like pretty solid ass card game. I like it a lot. And then off the profits that they made from that, they made a Tainted Grail Fall of Avalon. This came out of nowhere. I bought it in early access because I believed in it. And then there was nothing on this game for a while. Like, there was basically part of a level you could play. And then they kind of got a little bit further where you could play more of the level. And I was like, this is obviously very unfinished. I bought it in early access for like $22. Which they used to fund the game. Well, they kind of went dark. I forgot about it, put it in my early access folder. And then I want to say yesterday, got a notification, or it's Friday, I got a notification that was like, oh, 1.0 release of Tainted Grail Fall of Avalon. I was like, oh, okay. So they finally finished the game. I ought to check this out and see how it plays. Boy, howdy, it's good. It's really good. Like, way better than it has any right to be. It's essentially, I'm trying to explain how it is. All right, it's basically Skyrim. Let's just put it out there. It's a game like Skyrim, but it plays a lot different than Skyrim. For starters, the story is way better done. The story in the Elder Scrolls games has always been decent, but wouldn't put it as, like, high writing. Awakened Realms has done lots of, like, high accolade games, where a lot of people, I can't tell you off the top of my head what they have, but reading through a lot of Reddit forums, there's a lot of people that play their board games, right? And these are those really difficult and elaborate games like a Kingdom Death or something like that, right? The writing in this is really good. It's essentially King Arthur died and is trying to come back to life. There is a whole thing called the weirdness, and that sounds weird, but the WYRDENESS, weirdness. The weirdness comes on at night and it turns people into mindless monsters, essentially, right? So people still look like people, but they look kind of messed up. And then there are creatures that spawn and spirits that spawn and danger that spawns. You can only level up at a bonfire, but you can place a bonfire anywhere. I feel like every single component is used to craft, which is crazy. You can craft your own gear. You can store all your gear at a place, and then, of course, you know, it magically teleports wherever, right? All of your potions are actually useful. Not they're not in Oblivion, but it's a little bit cumbersome in Oblivion, right? Like, you gotta kind of hit the weapon wheel, right, and select your potion, or go into your bag and select your potion. Same thing with, like, Elder Scrolls, right? Skyrim. This has got a hotkey, so you can set up 3 hotkeys. You've got your foods, which give you, I'm assuming at some point they give you buffs, where right now they kind of give you slow healing and the components for food are a lot easier to find, but you've got all these potions that you can make, and you gain the recipes by reading information or overhearing. Like, one thing that really impressed me is you start off the game, you've been captured, you're in jail, and you're escaping jail, and I was like, all right, here I go again, rolling the spell sword, let's see if it does spell sword right. And so that's what I did. I basically rolled a spell sword. And the very first enemy, you know, that you take out as you're escaping jail, somebody, won't spoil it for you, but assists you, right? And like, there's a point I was sneaking around and I was overhearing the guards talk, and the guards were talking about how they needed to make it just sounds silly, but he was, one guard was scolding the other guard for not knowing how to make potions right. And so as you overhear him telling him how to make a potion, your character learns how to make your first health potion. I was like, that's pretty neat. Found a, like an alchemy lab for the cultists that were, had taken over this prison. And in the alchemy lab, it had a recipe in some like notes, like some autopsy notes, because there's a plague going on. And in the autopsy notes, it explains how to make like a mana potion. So that's how you learned how to make your mana potion. But you had to read this stuff. Like, it wasn't like you pick it up and automatically learned it. It does this neat thing where, like, when you pick up any kind of like letter or book or something like that, you can click a button, a hotkey, so you can immediately read it, which ends up being really useful. There were like five or six different paths I could take to get to the exit of that first area, which I also thought was like, oh, so we could take this on several different ways. And there were bosses that I found just going down, you know, different winding paths. The bosses had good loot. They were pretty difficult. It wants you to dodge a lot or parry or block. So block is just straight stamina reduction, you know, when somebody hits you. Or it's like, all right, that's fine. But if you time your block right when the enemy's about to hit you, then you stagger their stamina and you use a lot less stamina. So it encourages you to use parry. But you can also dodge. So in this, it's default mapped to the right bumper. And so you just click that and whatever direction you're facing, you automatically dodge. And it's got generous iframes. So you just time it for when they're about to hit you, dodge out of the way. It uses some stamina, but it's, you know, you're not getting hit at all, which is really good for a spell sword because I've got a spell in one hand and a weapon in the right hand. And for that whole dungeon, all I had was a really long dagger and a fireball and a basically like a leech health spell, which I found, which was actually pretty cool. So the leech health spell, like... if you remember Legacy of Kain, and this is digging deep, this is like a 30-year-old game. It's a vampire game, right? You could suck blood from enemies from a distance.
Yep.
This does the same thing. So if you've got the reticle lined up and you do the charge hold, it just starts sucking their blood over to you and refilling your health bar, which is insane. So I essentially became, it doesn't, you don't learn spells. You just equip a spell. Like, it's just one of your slots. So you have to go find spells. But there are trees for like skill trees for everything, right? For different types of ways to play. And it encourages hybrid play, which is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do some hybrid. Again, I'm going to be kind of a warrior. So focus on the damage skills for melee, while focusing on the damage and melee stuff from, or damage and mana stuff from the caster trees. But there's summons. There's a lot of enemies that you run into that are way tougher than you. Like, three or four enemies is pretty scary, honestly. The art design is very, I don't know, dark. It's a very, very dark universe. This is a very, very dark fantasy universe. Everything is, I think it's really well done. Like, bordering on horror. Like, it kind of is. It's like medieval horror, I would say it basically is. Spirits and things like that you run into are really gnarly looking and cool. Graphics look like they're from a generation ago. I'm not sure what engine they're using. Like, it's smooth, right? But they look dated. But the art design kind of compensates for that. It is very much design philosophy, kind of like Breath of the Wild. So Breath of the Wild, right? If you could see it in the distance, you should go explore it. This is that same design philosophy. There's all sorts of things. I even found a dungeon going to the bottom of a small pond that had a entrance to a dungeon I didn't expect at all. So really wants you to explore stuff. Yeah, you know, there's stamina management, mana management. If you're a caster, your mana recharges kind of fast. So, again, so why spell sword, right? I can equip a sword and shield if I need to while my mana recharges, but kind of initiate fights and kind of weave in magic where I can. But the dodging, it very much like Oblivion, right? Like if you're running or you're dodging or you're jumping, you're leveling up your agility skill. So if you play a certain way, it levels up the things that you're playing a certain way as. So it's, not super far into that game. I want to say, maybe I've played like 2 or 3 hours. I haven't had a chance to, you know, I only do so much in 3 days. But, yeah, it's, 10 Degree Fall of Avalon. Checking. Yeah, 4 hours is where I'm at. Highly addictive. I'm literally just trying to figure out what game do I want to finish right now. Because I've got all these huge games to finish. And I kind of told myself, whatever I want to play, that's what you're doing. And whatever I can't play on a plane, that's what I'm doing. So, yeah, I'm giving it pretty high praise. It came out of nowhere because, again, I didn't expect this to be launching right away. So, if you haven't checked it out, now is definitely the time. And I think it runs its indie price. I want to say $40 on sale, something like that. Maybe $44. But that is... did I say that I finished Forever Skies?
No, you didn't.
I finished that too.
Nice.
I did not realize I was an hour from finishing it. I finished that last weekend. I had a little bit of time. I fought sleep to finish that game. Pretty good game. I give it about a 4 out of 5. It's a B tier Subnautica. It's a Subnautica in the air. The building components for your ship is pretty neat. It's way more customizable than Subnautica on that. The components aren't really that hard to get, to be honest with you, because you can make almost everything out of synthetics and metals. It had a decent ending. I was kind of leads you down to one of two critical paths. I'm pretty sure I chose the good path. But yeah, ended with cinematics, etc. I was just like, I could unlock a few more recipes, or I think I could finish the game. Let's go explore that option. I was like, oh, I'm right here. But I think you could probably, if you're about medium on exploration, probably beat it in about 30, 35 hours. Runs a little bit janky. Just unfortunate because it's not a real high detail game. But yeah, it's like a B-tier Subnautica. It's like things that hold it back. The random generation actually holds it back because it basically generates points of interest in an area, and then you can fly around to those points of interest, and then you can kind of play process of elimination. They won't show up in the same way on your radar if you pull the battery on the transmitter that's on it. So you can use that to say, oh, I sweep that point of interest. But at a certain point, you've got a log of all the things you discovered at a point of interest. You can basically say, all right, well, if I run into that point of interest again, I'm not going to land there, right? Like I'm not going to waste my time because I'm not getting anything that I need. Because again, most of what you need, you can get in the sky. At a certain point, food really doesn't matter. Water doesn't really matter that much. It's not worth it to make a huge garden in your spaceship like it is in Subnautica. You get everything you need from the environment and you just supplement that with like one of each plant. I did not have a big garden. I did not have a very oversized ship. I beat it with a medium to small ship. You could dive way more into that, but I've played it so much in early access, I was really just interested in what was different. And finishing the story. They were actually, when I was playing it last, pretty far along in the story. It really wasn't that much more that I had to do. But, yeah, for our rating scale, 4 out of 5. Like, I liked it. Not as much as I like Subnautica. Give a similar vibe, though. A little bit more combat, but I think the combat's actually one of the weakest things in that game. And then, you know, how it runs, like, that's another point taken away from it. It gets samey after a while with the whole random gen. But yeah, that is what I've played.
Nice. Well, definitely a longer list than I got to.
Yeah, I know. Should we take a break?
Yeah, I think we're at a good spot, and that can, you know, give me a minute to put together some news.
All right, y'all. We'll be back. Back. Ooh. We are in the wide world of news here. There's actually a fair amount of things, like shorter stories, going on right now. Big things to look forward to. PC Gamer has been doing a PC gaming show for a while. And that will be happening in about a week from now. A little over a week from now. So on June 8th. Man, it's already going to be June 8th. So 2 weeks from now, June 8th, PC Gamer will have the PC gaming show. So if you want to look for, usually there's some pretty good, like, stuff you're only going to see on Epic and Steam kind of stuff that shows up at that show. And I actually preferred it to E3 because it was not focused on AAAs typically. So usually a really long stream. Well, let's say they stream like for 3 days for like 4 or 5 hours a day or something crazy like that. So usually there's a lot of news. And I think once we hit that, and of course the Switch reveal, when that finally hits, like, we'll have a lot more to talk about in the news section, but just kind of stay tuned. We'll be covering it the week after, basically, because we're not going to be covering it as it's going on. There's some big Avowed updates going on right now. So me and Rusty have had our fair share of gripes about Avowed, mostly having to do with not being able to kind of switch out of a build, right? So the reason is you pick a weapon, and then you basically, per area, you have enough resources to do like 3 or 4 upgrades. There is a big update that's coming that's supposed to fix a lot of that. So we were not the only people talking about that. People have Avowed. The creator from Avowed listened, right, or the team listened. But it's all quality of life stuff, right? Let me see if I can find the total. So for this month, so 1.4 rolled out Friday, May 15th, so about 10 days ago. Focused on Fog of War improvements, map exploration, increased gold and crafting materials, soul pods, and unique gear. Something that B and Rusty both asked for. And they added, you know, some power attacks for bows and arquebuses, as well as an arachnophobia mode for Rusty. There's not that many spiders. Well, no, there is a lot of spiders. In the summer, they're going to focus a little bit more on cooking and crafting, as well as new NPC behaviors and abilities, active and passive abilities, unique weapons and armor, and custom map markers for exploration. For fall, they're going to include new weapon types, the ability to change appearances in the wild, and change character presets, and more godlike presets, and a photo mode. So, not sure what they're going to do after that, but revisiting Avowed, if there's nothing going on in November, is something I'll probably do. But those were all valid criticisms. Those are all the things. A big chunk of the things, like NPC behaviors is one thing holding back Avowed, and the variety of crafting materials and just basic stuff in that game is holding it back. The actual, like, core mechanics are pretty good. the core story is pretty good. The, you know, I don't know that I want to focus on arquebuses, and I want to focus on a spell sword build now, which that's my favorite build, right? It's kind of difficult to do because you never got very many materials to do so. And even with getting, being able to break stuff down to get, like, I broke down high tier weapons just to almost kit out my character before end of game. Almost kit out my character. So that was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Speaking of Avowed, I don't know that it did incredibly well. So the game director for Avowed was Carrie Patel. She left the studio after 12 years to take on a similar position at Night School, which is a Netflix-owned developer of the Oxenfree games. The Oxenfree games are good, but they're pretty small. Not a lot more info other than that. It's not real uncommon for CEOs to leave and go elsewhere, right? They're not necessarily the developers. They're just kind of managing the day-to-day and the scope of what they're doing. They're not necessarily always responsible for what goes on in a game. So I don't know if that means anything bad for Obsidian. But a little bit annoyed that Avowed wasn't better. I really wanted that to be a very good game, and it ended up being kind of a little bit mid-tier. Not bad, just not great. There is some additional information. We were talking about, you know, that UA5 was a big thing on top of Oblivion, right? And it looks really good. It's an interview with Video Gamer. One of the former studio leads explained that they can't just shift the studio to Unreal. I think a lot of it just has to do with being able to interact with different things in the environment. The one key thing about a lot of Bethesda games is object interaction, right? Like, just about everything can be interactive. And Unreal doesn't really have the source code for that kind of stuff. That's also why the game never looked or had as good a physics as Unreal. But I do, the other thing is, I guess the modding structure is also not there in Unreal in the same way that it is with the creation engine, and people have really figured that engine out. So they plan on continuing to use that engine while potentially putting a wrapper on top of it. So I don't, there's people that want to see Bethesda completely flip everything on its head and just get rid of creation engine. A core tenet of their games is interactive environments, right? If you drop a gun, I'll give you an example of like where it's a little bit immersion breaking. Two examples. So I was playing Forever Skies, right? And if you dropped an item, you just dropped a cube. It was in your inventory. It had an icon. If you dropped it on the ground, you didn't drop a moth in the ground. You dropped a little cube. I was playing Tainted Grill, right? Kind of a similar thing. Like a lot of things were in bags. So it wasn't universal. Some of the stuff I dropped had object permanence, and you dropped it, and it would be like an actual like sword or dagger. But all the clothes that I looted and I was dropping because I was like over-encumbered would drop in this little like cloth sack. And so I dropped a whole bunch of stuff because I was really heavy. And I dropped all these sacks on the ground, which I just thought was kind of hilarious. But, you know, this not... like I just dropped a big pile of clothes. I dropped a whole bunch of sacks of unidentified stuff, right? But so that's kind of a Bethesda hallmark, is making games in that way, and they've used it to great effect in a lot of games, and lesser effect in things like Starfield. And Starfield, it didn't make as much sense, but, you know, to each their own. Me and you still haven't played this, but Stellar Blade got a sequel confirmed, and that is possibly coming in 2026. That's been a PlayStation exclusive. I've heard it's supposed to come to PC at some point. When it does, I'm going to wait for a sale and then get it. Have you heard
about... I'm not sure about that one.
It looked like it was a good action game.
Yeah. Yeah. But it also looked maybe a little too Japanesey for me.
That's fair. Speaking of Japanesey, take advantage of Game Pass. Metaphor ReFantazio is on Game Pass right now. So you need to set aside some real time for that, though. The first 4 or 5 hours, a lot of world building. Also works on Steam Deck. That's another one. I just downloaded it on my Steam Deck. I need to sync my cloud, and then maybe that's a good game for the plane because I've got jack shit to do.
Yeah.
Have you heard my... We've talked a little bit about Marathon, right?
A little bit. I mean, there's not been a whole lot to talk about other than it looks like, you know, it may be a non-starter for Bungie.
Yeah, it had mixed to negative reviews on the closed alpha test. Some of the other things that happened as well around that game is there was an art theft scandal. So it was revealed that on some of Marathon's promotional materials and in-game art were directly copied from an indie artist's real work, who goes by Antireal. You can find him on X. So that's one thing that they did. Also, another thing is... Sony scrapped all of their paid marketing for this game. So letting that sink in, it's supposed to be released, I want to say September 23rd. It is speculated that we're not going to even see the pre-order information drop here next month, which we were supposed to.
That could tell you a lot right there.
So they're either reworking the game or they're scrapping it. Like, that's my honest opinion. I would be very surprised.
Or Sony's just decided we're not going to... It's still going to release, but we're not going to throw any more money at it because we don't stuck on making anything.
Well, they're saying that there are now no plans to do paid marketing for Marathon at all right now.
Yeah, I think they've just decided they're gonna lose money on it, so they'll probably still release it to get whatever they can, because you know you still have the Bungie fanboys out there who will buy it. But it wouldn't surprise me if they're just not if they're just calling it a loss.
Yeah. There's a lot of controversy right now over using AI in game design. There's some unique ways that people are using it. So Xenoblade Chronicles 3, used an AI tool called Houdini. So the way that this works, they said the developer could create a 3D modeler and a texture for a tree, then define the parameters of what a tree should look like, and the software will then generate a number of trees that all look different but follow the developer's set guidelines. So it's procedural asset generation. It uses an algorithm to base the assets created by the developer itself, so it's not as same as generative AI. So they're kind of using AI in a way where they're setting parameters for it and then looking at their work. In Xenoblade Chronicles, they were quoted as saying, in the past, we managed to produce 1,000 to 2,000 assets manually, but by now, that number has increased to 100,000, which is impossible to keep up with manually. So they're saying that they're using it to save them costs on labor and set themselves up for broader overall scope. Which I think that's not horrible. I guess I just... As long as you have a good QA department, right? AI can get really squirrely. CD Projekt Red is also
tough. I mean, if you're also like, if you're just monitoring its outputs, it's not that hard to. It could still save developers a lot of time in the long. You know, it's a lot easier to make tweaks than it is to build stuff completely from scratch.
Well, the CD Projekt team is talking about with what they're calling Cyberpunk 2, they had a job posting. And in the job posting, it said, CD Projekt Red is building internal systems that use procedural techniques to create urban layouts, likely city blocks, streets, and buildings. Create interior spaces, so apartments, offices, or shops. Assemble NPCs or crowds dynamically. And then speed up world building. And they're quoted as saying that they're using this to get the groundwork set for massive scope, but then also going in and personally correcting things after they do it. Which, that's a smarter way of using that, right? Like, if they can make a huge open world by generating some content based on parameters, again, and then going back and altering that stuff in a handcrafted way, I don't know that I have an issue with that. So it's not completely procedural in the way that some of the roguelites are, right? They're using the procedural generation to create stuff for, to create that play space and then going back and then altering it. Me and you have played games like, you know, 7 Days to Die has a procedural generation map, right, that sets POIs and things like that. They created all the POIs, but it recreates the world itself, right? So all the hills and valleys and places, all the trees, etc., and then places the points of interest randomly. So imagine if you did something like that to get your canvas, right? And then you removed and redid a few things off that generation. And I think that's what you have. So this isn't AI in the same way that just completely builds stuff based on other people's assets. They're feeding it assets and then letting it randomly place all of that stuff, and then they're going back in and retooling it.
Nice. But, I mean, that is the one thing that all of the nascent AIs are going to make a lot easier, is procedurally generating maps, right? Cityscapes. Eventually NPCs, if NVIDIA's to be believed, right? Which could give developers a lot more freedom. I'm kind of down for it.
Kind of down for it, too. To me, it's a way that you can use AI in a smart way. I think I kind of
figured... Oh, and it's just another tool in the toolbox, right?
Right.
I mean, imagine what Cyberpunk 2077 would have been like if you didn't just see the same 15 or 20 NPCs copy and pasted throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, at some point you get kind of like crowd fatigue, so you don't really start to see the pattern unless you're just looking at a big crowd, you know?
Yeah.
It keeps showing up in the news, but because Dragon Age was ruined by EA, essentially, right? There was a... GamesRadar had an article. It was published yesterday. And the headline was, Dragon Age Maestro says EA always spoke about a hypothetical nerd cave full of diehard RPG fans who would always show up so you didn't have to try and appeal to them. Summarizing the article, there were veterans that had tried to rearrange the shape of those games. So starting with Dragon Age 2 and then going to the latest one, right? Like every iteration of the game after Origins got progressively worse. And essentially what they were referring to is that those old mechanics were old-fashioned and didn't have good mass appeal, right? So EA is always trying to broaden its appeal as far as possible to gather the largest audience. The problem is that the people that really like these games are people that appreciate those old-school mechanics or appreciate a variation of those old-school mechanics. And so essentially they were... The synopsis of this is that industry veterans at BioWare that still work there for a while, right, under the EA umbrella, continue to focus on things like narrative and world building and, you know, somewhat complex mechanics, but very open-ended mechanics where EA wanted to dumb things down, right? So we got the laziest and dumbest story so far on the most recent one, and the laziest and dumbest mechanics on the latest one as well, to where it was super bat-mashy, right? Again, I played through about half of it and then quit because I was bored and wanted to play something of higher quality. I felt tricked by Dragon Age. So my biggest disappointment of 2024, like by a landslide. It just, that design philosophy, right? EA used to be a pretty good company. EA used to be very innovative. EA used to release a lot of high quality products. And EA has essentially turned into like a mass appeal, boring slop games. And very much the same way like Ubisoft has kind of done the same thing, right? Appeal to the broadest audience possible and have no identity of your own. And it just kind of summarized for me like a very big wing of why Dragon Age is just not the same. I'm not expecting a lot from Mass Effect, if you want me to be honest. It's still under that EA umbrella. And they have not turned out a quality BioWare product ever. Right? Dragon Age 3 is decent. Mass Effect 3 is decent. Mass Effect 2, though, was very good.
Mass Effect 2 was a masterpiece.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to get it day one. I'm gonna wait for reviews. I'm really going to wait for reviews on Mass Effect. Because I don't know that EA understands why their games keep failing, or why none of the people that like those games, right? I don't think they've learned their lesson. You can stop making trash. When you got a game like Expedition 33 that's selling gangbusters and didn't... Let's talk about price point for just a second, right? So, talking about that story about Randy Pitchard. So I'll go through it. So, essentially, Randy Pitchford responded to a fan who expressed concern about the prospect of paying $80 for Borderlands 4. And he said, if you're a real fan, you'll find a way to make it happen. Several people have responded to that. And the way this came out is somebody said, Randy, this game better not be $80. Don't take that risk. A lot of gamers aren't going to pay $80 and feed this notion of constant increase of the price tag. You're the CEO. You have some say of the price when it comes to your publisher. And his full response is, A, not my call. B, if you're a real fan, you'll find a way to make it happen. The local game store had Starflight for Sega Genesis for $80 in 1999 when I was just out of high school working minimum wage in an ice cream parlor in Pismo Beach, and I found a way to make it happen. Lots of people have backlashed hard. And the thing is like Borderlands hasn't been really good since Borderlands 2, right? Like Borderlands 3, good gameplay, ridiculous villains. Right? None of them had Handsome Jack. It was super cringe, right? And all the spinoffs have also been super cringe. And none of all of them really landed, right? There's a lot of other games that fill that same space for co-op looter, single-player looter shooter, or co-op looter shooter, right? And Borderlands has just not hit the same in, like, over 10 years. So I don't know that they have the capital to say that. Like, again, and I talked about Micropunk, right? Devolver Digital had fired back and said, well, for the price of one Borderlands, you can get four copies of Micropunk coming out the same day. So they're going to boldly go there and probably get a fair amount of people. The game's pretty good. Again, you can play the demo, get an idea of what it's like. It's already on Steam, so you can check it out. And I will pay $20 for Micropunk. I would like to... You know, it's kind of got a Risk of Rain meets Borderlands feel. Go ahead.
I have a problem with an industry as a whole, right? Because you have games like Baldur's Gate 3. You have games like Clair Obscura that show that if you give a developer and a game a proper amount of time to cook, and you're not trying to push sales target, and you're not trying to push some social or political agenda on your game,
or you're not trying to make meet a financial quarter deadline.
Yeah. Look at what can be done. Like, those two games are the perfect examples of, modern examples of, this is what you do. You want to make a bunch of money? This is it. Make a complete whole game that's not completely fucked with bugs, that's not trying to be super political or you know, super encompassing of everyone's feelings. Just write a good story and make a good game.
It just, again, and you go to like EA and Ubisoft games, right? Like, they have such general feel to them, right, anymore, that they don't focus down on a certain thing, right? Like, they just feel bloated. They don't feel fun. They feel like they are games that are meant to keep your attention at, like, you know, a 6 out of 10 experience for as long as possible collecting bullshit, right? Or doing bullshit repeatable quests or bullshit repeatable actions to keep you playing something a long time, versus having a focused experience that's focused on very specific mechanics, that's focused on very specific things, but a focus towards a specific audience, right? Like, Expedition 33 is not an easy game, right? I ran up against a wall last night fighting one of the bosses, and it took me a while. It was just explaining that I figured out that one of the bosses was all parries, which is also difficult, right? There's a lot of indies out there that are worth checking out. And I think for the price of Game Pass, like Expedition 33, super worth checking out. Like, it may be, again, I haven't finished it, right? But it may be this year's essentially like Baldur's Gate style like RPG. I don't know a lot of RPGs that are going to beat it this year. It's very good. Like, one of the best games I've played in a long time, right? And that's not hyperbolic. It's actually good. There's a lot of people that are, like, sounding like they're being hyperbolic talking about it. It's an exceptionally well-crafted game. Except for the fatal error crash. That needs to be fixed. And it's using... It's a modern take on a old Final Fantasy, and they're not stuck in the Final Fantasy trope of using a bunch of people that are like 18, 19 years old, just becoming of age. They're all people in their 30s. Sans one. But most of your party are all adults, right? With adult issues and problems and conflict. It doesn't feel trite. It feels really good. And it's very dark. It's a very, very mature story, and not that just blood and guts. Like, it's very good. It deserves recognition it's getting. Don't be the hater because it's popular right now. It's popular for all the right reasons. It's popular for its price point. It's popular for its writing. It's popular for its gameplay. It's popular for, like, having a focused narrative. It's popular for reinventing some of the turn-based mechanics of games. It's popular for all the right reasons. It's worth checking out. Got one thing, one lighter story. We played a lot of Stalker several months ago. They remastered all of the old Stalker games.
Really?
Yep. It's a free upgrade. It just downloads. They just redid the old games. I haven't looked at it it's not as deep as the Oblivion remake, but it looks at least twice as good as they did before. But what they said it translates is new lighting, reflections, textures, shaders, and a 4K cinematics. Steam Deck compatibility, mod support, and Xbox and PlayStation controller compatibility. So it's kind of excited about the Steam Deck thing. That might give me something different to play while I'm on the plane. Might start on the OG Stalker and give it a rip.
It's a good idea.
I don't know if I talked about it, but absolutely last, but absolutely not least, Fallout Season 2 trailer, if you haven't checked it out, it is very obviously New Vegas.
Yes, it is.
I am super excited for it. It's supposed to come out holiday, so December this year. Perfect timing for it. I'm going to have a week so I can watch an episode a day while I'm taking time off for the holidays. I am super duper excited for that. But yeah, what games do we have coming out? Let's say June.
I'm still trying to pull it up, but you have
Let's see, what do we have left?
We've got the new Rogue City coming out in early July.
Wait, is Onimusha 2 out? Oh, no, that's the remake. Wait, I thought that was a new... Hold on. Is that an old remake? It must be, because that came out in 2002. I thought there was another Onimusha game coming out. Am I wrong?
Elden Ring Night Rain comes out at the end of the month on the 30th. Let's see. Final Fantasy VII Remake Integrate comes out June 5th on Switch 2.
June.
Been out for a while on PC and PlayStation.
June 5th has like 7,000 releases for Switch 2.
Yeah.
I was just talking about it. Stellar
Dune
Blade.
Awakening comes out on June 10th for PC.
That's an MMO though, right?
MMO. Yep. Death Stranding 2 on the Beach comes out for the PS5 on June 26th.
I was wrong. So Onimusha 2 was a remake that's being released this month. Onimusha Way of the Sword comes out next year. I was wrong. That's good for me, though, because I don't have enough time to play it right now.
And then so far, most everything else looks like it's a remake or re-release.
The only fresh. The Elden Ring release, I'm not sure about, right? I may wait on that. That comes out next weekend. Death Stranding 2, though, comes out June 26th, so about a month away.
Oh, and Tales of the Shire, Lord of the Rings game, comes to PC and consoles July 29th.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any love for that. Yeah, it's a farm sim. It's a farm sim.
It's a farm simulator.
Yeah, it's another bullshit Lord of the Rings game.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot of good Lord of the Rings games. Something you did forget. System Shock 2 25th Anniversary Remaster comes out on June
26th. Oh, yeah. I didn't see that. I mean, so far what we've seen in trailers, it looks good.
Yeah, there's a...
And System Shock 2 was a great game.
And there's a shitload to play from this month. I didn't even talk about it, but Monster Train 2 just released on PC, Switch, Xbox Series S, PS5, Game Pass on May 21st. I have played a little bit of that. It is pretty good. It's very hard. So yeah, there's a lot to play.
Yep. It's a pretty game heavy going into the summer.
There's enough out right now.
Second half of the year is pretty thin.
There's probably enough in the summer to keep me busy through like October, to be honest with you. I say that a lot, but like reality setting in, like there's so many big games. So take that for what you will. Where can you find us, Jason?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z. And find us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast and tvgp.tv. They probably have a better handle on marathon news. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.